What's up, guys? Welcome to the Flawed Dad's Guide to Parenting, the podcast all about the average flawed dad trying to be a better parent. Today, we're talking to J.P. Noel Safis, author, influencer, and public figure. We talk about a range of different things, including raising your kids in the public eye, dating after divorce, raising your children after you're divorced, co-parenting, a whole bunch of really interesting topics that I think you're going to enjoy. So stick around and listen as two flawed dads figure out how not to screw up their kids too bad.
Hey, JP, how are you doing today?
Hey, Warren. I'm doing really well, thank you.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Lovely to see you. Thank you very much, Graham. You guys are so welcoming and lovely and kind. Thank you very much for welcoming me onto your podcast.
We only play welcoming and kind on TV. Otherwise, we're really a couple of pricks. So,
well, yeah, that's kind of welcoming for me. That's what I'm used to. I feel, you know, I'm at home.
What the audience doesn't know is we've been chatting for the past 30 minutes about a whole bunch of things. Who knows how this interview is going to go? Because, as you said, we've probably exhausted all the human entertainment already. But hey,
no, this is true. Well, you like you said, what the audience doesn't know, but they bloody well do know now, Graham.
Yeah, you gave it away, Graham. So
it's the secret. It's how the sausage is made. You gotta.
Nobody wants to see that. So JP, tell us a little bit about your family.
Family. So I've got no brothers and sisters, you know, apart from
only child.
Only child. You know, I've got imaginary ones that I made up when I was, you know, small. And somehow I seem to have aged and they've stayed the same, you know.
Oh, so they're still around.
They're still around, yeah. You know, I mean, Dorothy. Because that was from the Wizard of Oz.
Yep.
You know, she was my sister and she's still, and Toto is around somewhere sometimes, you know, as well. But yeah, I grew up in the countryside with zero brothers and sisters, no siblings, and my mum and dad, and they're still together, been together for going on 53 years now.
Wow. That's not common. Like,
yeah, it's not common. It's incredible, actually. Yeah. It's quite sick because they're having more sex than me. Right, I tell you now, they're having more sex because I'm single. You know, they're having more.
Is that a regular dinner time conversation? Is this
an Instagram post that they update?
Your father?
Yeah. Well, I don't want to ask. You know, it's like why are you guys having dinner early? You know, and it's stuff like that. And, you know, they go on dates, you know, I mean, obviously pre-COVID, they go on dates once a week to sort of like the cinema, and they go restaurant, yep. They go on holidays three times a year, and they eat together every night. You know, I mean, when I'm dating someone, I don't even want to have a cup of tea with a person sometimes. You know, I need my
space.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, I need my space. But yeah, they've got it going on. So I come from quite a privilege in these times, is a privileged background to have. And I've got two kids of mine. I was divorced about 10 years ago. I was married for about 16 years.
Yeah.
And then I got divorced. That just came to an abrupt, well, I suppose not abrupt, but natural poor end. And then out of that, I managed to claim joint custody of my children. Mm-hmm. And today we are, you know, real tight. We're really close. We have I have joint custody. My son's 20. One son's 20. The other one's going to be 16 in five weeks.
Yeah.
And my younger son's on joint custody. My elder one now lives mostly with his mum.
Yeah.
Because he's trying to move out and he's living with his girlfriend and stuff. So, yeah, we're a good close family. I've got great family experiences. Some uncles and aunts in this country. So it's a privilege, quite frankly, to be from a background where the family is quite an important thing.
Yeah. With the two kids coming from being a only child, did you know you always wanted to have more than one kid? Did you consider only having one child? What was the motivation?
I knew that I always wanted to have more than one child. I knew how I'd felt growing up.
Yeah.
I knew that there was moments. I'm very comfortable in my own skin, very comfortable being on my own. But there were times when, you know, because you didn't have company growing up as a kid, you felt lonely.
Yeah.
And you felt, you know, and also coming from an ethnic background, my dad was fairly new to the country, didn't trust, you know, his son of 7, 8 years old going out to play all the time. It was like, stay at home and study, you know, learn, you know. So I didn't always get that social interaction in the community either.
And it so shows. That could,
yeah, so that that has it. Yeah, so that was quite good actually. Loads of moments of peace. But yeah, I think that does make you feel like you perhaps would like to have more than one child.
Because now, you didn't raise the kids out in the country though, hey? You moved into the city to...
Definitely not. I left home at 18.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I just had enough of these imaginary brothers and sisters. I mean, I just thought, you know something, I can't depend on you to even pick up my socks.
I said, what good are you?
Yeah. I told you, pick up the socks and they're still there, God damn it. So I said, I'm moving to London. So I packed up, you know, a bit like that, you know, yeah, packed up my bag on my back. And I said, right. I said, I'm going to university. And they said, okay, we're proud of you. And I said, great. And then my mum said, you're never coming back, are you? And I said, no, I'm probably not. I said, I'm not going to miss anything here, mum. You know, I said, I really not. And the place I came from was just, you know, there was no other ethnic people around. There wasn't really a lot going on. Mm-hmm. So when I came to London, I thought, yes, I'm in the city.
Yeah.
I thought, this is brilliant. And then I found out it was the most weird place to be.
Mm.
Because people are stressed, they don't talk to each other.
Yeah.
You know, at least in the countryside, things are like, hey there, how you doing? You know, what's been going on for the last month that I haven't seen you? But in the city, everything's so fast.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's a completely different life. So no, my kids were raised in Croydon, or just on the edge, just on the edge of the city.
Yeah.
So they're much more, you know, switched on than I was.
Now your son who's 20, who's trying to move in with his girlfriend and, you know, be out on his own. Does he want to go further into the city or is he looking to move out towards the country? What direction's he going?
I think he wants to go further. I think he just wants to get further into his girlfriend.
I think you're fooling yourself if you think he hasn't already.
Listen, he was in nappies in my hand, all right, years ago. He's done nothing like that at all in my eyes. All right. He does not have fluids. I don't know. I think with him, it's interesting because we were having a chat today. We spoke about an hour on the phone today, and he said to me, he said, you know what, once I settle down in my job, because he's working now. Okay. And he said, once I settle down, I've got some money, I want to travel. He said, and eventually when I'm about 30, I don't want to live in this country. I'd like to be somewhere where, because he said, the world is so big. I could go to Brazil. Yeah. I could go here, there. I could work remotely. Yeah. He said, I could go anywhere. He said, you know, there's just so many places I could go. So yeah, it's up for grabs. I mean, I think he might want to end up moving somewhere else because he's got that, you know, that aspiration, which I think is brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, so, as long as, it's even better. I've got to say, between you guys and me, because I know no one else is watching.
No, nobody listens to our podcast. So.
No one listens. I know. One view. It's like between us. I mean, that means he will not be ever living back in my house.
Right.
Which is fucking crazy. I mean, you know, if you've ever had your kids living up with a certain age, you know, shit, they don't listen. They don't do what they're supposed to. They just live like it's a hotel.
Right.
Yeah.
So if he's got his house, I can go to his house and treat it like a fucking hotel.
That's right.
My wife
this?
And I.
Do you like this? You like this? Do you remember when you did this?
How'd you like this? How'd you like this? Yeah, pick it up.
Did you get groceries?
Yeah.
Because I ate everything in your
famished.
Yeah.
Hey, no. Hey, watch this, right? So this is what you do. Here's what you do. You go to their fridge, you take out the bottle of juice.
Straight from the bottle.
Right.
And then you leave the tiniest speck of water, of juice in the bottle, and put it back. What the hell? Why do people do that shit?
Now, your level of experience is far higher than our age range goes in terms of children. Warren caps out at 10.
Yeah.
I only cap out at 6. So that's the breadth of our knowledge as it goes so far. So you have so much more insight into things than we did.
You've got it to come. I'm telling you. But the worst thing is, I was having this conversation. My uncle came along and said, well, when you lived with us, you was the same.
Yeah.
He said, you used to drink like the juice empty and put the bottle back. Why would you drink the bottle? And I said, see what happened. I remember what happened is the bin was too far away to walk to.
Yeah.
So exactly. I didn't want to just leave it around.
It was your uncle's fault for not moving the bin closer. That's the reality.
That's right. It's not my fault.
So my wife and I were having this debate earlier today. So, I mean, you've hit on a few things here that Graham and I debate on all the time, the country versus city living and where to raise kids, that sort of thing. Cause you know, my wife and I are in the process of looking at moving out into the country. And so Graham and I debated the pros and cons in a previous episode. And we were talking about this morning as we were headed out, our oldest being 10, I said to Rachel, if we move out to the country, you know, we've only got 7 years with her left. And I'm always the first person to be like, okay, get these kids out of the house. Like I'm ready for them to go. But I turned to Rachel. I said, we've only got 7 years with her. And if we're in the country, she's never coming back. But she's going to move out and, you know, she'll move to a city or wherever. And Rachel turned to me and said, do you really want them back? And I had to think, I'm like, there's a part of me that will really miss them. But at the same time, no, I'm ready for them to leave. You know, already. I'm ready.
Already? And the girl's only 10.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, I have three daughters, right? Three daughters and my wife. So there's a lot of estrogen floating around our house.
Wow.
And okay. Yeah, let's say everything is dealt with emotions in our house.
Right.
There's no logical reasoning to anything that takes place. It's, you know, what is going to be the most emotional reaction possible to any situation?
That's the approach I'm taking.
Yeah.
I think as parents, we don't want kids to stay with us for too long, but I think in general, you want them somewhat near, just generally accessible for you to go in and drink half their juice and leave it back in the fridge. And it's the small things that you really appreciate that you want to have.
Do you know what? I hear you, Graham, but yours is only 6. You got 4 years to catch up to Warren, and then you'll be coming back saying, shit, I need to move. And I'm guessing, Graham, have you got a son or daughter?
Yep. Warren and I have only daughters. So again, we have no breadth of information to speak to anything about boys other than our own experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's cool. So you've got some experience with girls. I mean, I don't have any girls, so it's different. And I imagine I was having a chat with someone the other day, and I'm sure I saw this. It was either one of your posts or something. It was a post I saw recently how girls are treated differently, very differently by dad to boys.
Yeah.
You know, boys have a lot more pressure on them and expectations, whereas girls are very much like, well, I don't expect much from you. So you're kind of cute. You know, I can enjoy you. You're just, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. We did a whole episode on dad's.
Even the naming of it, right? Like the nicknames for different daughters, and daughters are a lot more princess and cutie and things like that. And,
right.
And boys are sort of sport champ.
Yeah.
Type stuff. We did a whole conversation about that. It's quite interesting when you start to think about this sort of stuff and the differences there.
That was quite interesting. I think I did see that on yours, and I thought, I'd never thought of that before, because I just thought girls pink, boys in blue. You know, I don't know, can you say that now? But it's like
Say it. It's not right, but you can say it. So you can say whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, okay, let's go one further. Can I think that now? Am I
That's a good question. The thought police are you know, just
I like the strategy. You know, let's think strategically about where we're going to move our location of our house, because our kids can fuck off one day. And if we're in the city, there's less chance of them moving because they're already in the center of entertainment. Whereas we move to the sticks and the quiet land, the gurgling sound of the brook and the river will just not keep them here for too much longer past 17. Yeah, you know, get rid of them.
So you've never had a desire to move back out to the country?
I do. Do you know what? I go and visit the countryside every few months because it's first of all, it's in my blood because I've grown up there. So sure. I love nature. I love, you know, just the freedom, and the smell is completely different. I mean, you can smell stuff.
Yeah.
which, you know, the level of dense, thick fog pollution you have in the city means you just is a wall of it. You can't smell. You right. can swim in it. So it's nice to go out there. But when I go out there and I spend a few days, that's when I realize I would not want to stay here permanently.
Okay.
You know, I think that's the problem, is once you've gone to a developed part of the world, I think you have to be almost sick to sort of leave it again. Do you know what I mean? It's like one of those things where I'll have a heart attack one day and I'll be like, shit, I need to get out of it. This place is killing me, man.
Right.
And then I could be like, right, best go and retire somewhere in the countryside, you know? Like those investment bankers.
Yeah.
You know all about that. I mean, you guys destroyed the banking system. So, you know, it's like we had that years ago, back in 2008, Merrill Lynch and all those guys having heart attacks because they worked so damn hard in that industry, exploding, you know, their arteries. And then when they come out, they're like, I need to go somewhere that's practically dead, you know, and bake cookies and raise lavender in the fields.
Right.
You know, it's that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
But I don't think I could stay there. I don't think I would be able to stay there. Not right now. I'm too fresh.
I just one thing from your backstory a little bit. You mentioned that, divorce happened about 10 years ago or so now. And we had a previous guest on that also has a sort of joint custody overall as well. What was that like for you? Was it a sort of a more seamless transition, or was there some challenges and pitfalls associated to that?
The actual divorce process was quite emotionally and physically draining. I've got high energy. I'm an energetic guy.
Couldn't tell.
Well, I haven't taken my, you know, my meds yet.
Hence Dorothy and Toto.
Usually it's on a drip somewhere in the back. You can't see the wires. But I think going through that, you know, just totally, you know, zonked me out, man. It was going to court, feeling like a failure, having the kind of, you know, I failed at my parents are still married and I'm failing here at marriage. My kids are unhappy. I failed as a dad. I failed as a husband. I failed as a member of society. My family don't like me. My kids might be upset. My ex-wife is making money. There's so much going on.
Yeah.
I was literally training every day. I used to box. I was on the punch bag every single day, the heavy bag every single day. I remember people used to walk past the gym and they wouldn't come close. They would think this guy, you know, if he's either on drugs or needs some, you know. So I think that was, to answer your question, it was probably the most challenging part of my life ever.
How'd you get through it? What advice would you give to somebody who's going through it right now?
You know, join, get a punch bag.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I think if you listen, here's the truth. When I look back and I know what it was, I know why it was so difficult for me, because the reason it was so difficult was because I would talk about it all the time, but to anybody.
Okay.
And I should have found a small network of people that I could talk to that really cared about me.
Okay.
That would actually be able to listen to me and give me their emotional support. I didn't have any emotional support, none. My parents were sat on the fence because they didn't want to lose their grandchildren. They didn't want to piss off my ex-wife.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so they were sat on the fence saying, well, you know, we're sad about it, but they wouldn't get emotionally involved at all.
Right.
And I hated them for that at the time.
Right.
I
felt you wanted them to take your side.
Yeah, I wanted them to take my side. I mean, today I understand, I applaud them. They did really well. I think they did the right thing. But at the time, I hated them. I was like, well, because I was needy.
Right.
When you're in that position, you're in deficit emotionally. You're needy, man. You need. So when I look back, it was fine to hit the punch bag and it was fine to physically train, but that just keeps your adrenaline levels high. And what you need to do is you need to be able to let out some of the emotion with somebody who cares.
Right.
Yeah.
I would say to anybody who's watching that you need to find somebody, even if it's a therapist, that you can talk to.
So with that hindsight, looking back, how did you interact in terms of your children overall too? Like, would you look back and think to yourself now, maybe I should have been more supportive, or perhaps you were, I don't know the scenario, but with that hindsight, is it like, well, geez, you know, I was feeling that, maybe my children were as well.
Well, I tell you, it's the one thing I can actually, I never judge myself because I'm not the right person to judge myself. I can't see myself from an outside perspective. So I never try and sit there and analyze what I'm like, ever. I learned a long time ago, it's totally pointless, because you run on your subconscious. 90% of me plus is subconscious. There's little point me trying to analyze it. So, but it's one thing I look back on, because I get the feedback from people around me and my kids. And I know that in that period, my kids are actually the ones that kept me sane and grounded, because what they needed was love and support. And I found that part of me quite easy to give. I found that was the only part that was constant all the time, because I loved them so much, so much. All the way through, it was very much about how you guys doing. Let's look at it from your perspective. This is upsetting you. I can see you're a bit sad or reactive. So let me see what I can do for you. Let me try and give to you. It was all about trying to make it for the children at the time. And it does sound, people say this all the time to me, oh, it's always about the other person. I think, no, you've got to take care of yourself. But I knew that that small period, they needed that transition for me to be constant. So even though inside it was going to shit, on the outside, I would still do the little things like stop over the toy shop. The things I'd always done, I checked my routines. You always do this on Mondays, Tuesdays. Stick to your routine, because your kids understand routine.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they're in, the rhythm of the routine. They don't think about it as long as the routine carries on. So get them up in the morning. I was doing all that, get them up in the morning, get them ready for school, taking their lunches. If I've got a day off, I would ride into the school on my bike and pick them up, put them on the handlebars, ride them down the hill back home again. Yeah. You know, sit there, dig, you know, play with them, the puzzles, the days out. I continue to do all that. Yep. And then when I get them to school, and then I go back, oh my God, I can't handle this shit. Oh Lord, when will it end? Yeah. I feel terrible, man. I need some drugs. I need something. I can't deal with this shit. Lord, yeah. Help me. And then, you know, even in the car sometimes, I'll be crying. Yeah. If I'm going to pick my kids up, I'll be crying, you know. But right. When I get there, you and Cena, I'd be like, hey, what's up, guys? Right. It's being an actor.
Yeah,
right.
You know, sometimes people don't want to act in their lives. They just want to let out their, but sometimes, you know, people, as a guy, guys are great at acting when they're chasing a girl.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You know, because it's not them, it's nature. It changes your, you see the most beautiful girl and you're like, hey, you look so good from it. You know, you find the lyrics and you don't know where they come from. Yeah, you don't know where they come from. It's like, oh, I'm a poet,
deep,
and I didn't
deep
even
down between your legs. Yeah,
that's right.
Way down. But yeah, so I did find that. I did find that there was a lot of acting.
Yeah.
Because my son said to me last year, he said, Dad, he said, it's amazing. He was 20 when he said to me, he said, Dad, it's amazing. He said, looking back, he said, we had all this stuff going on, and you know, you did so much. He said, you were never stressed. And I said, yeah. I said, well, you know, I got through it.
Right.
Now you've taken this challenge of the divorce and all this kind of stuff, and you've turned it into being like a model in the UK for dads and parenting and that kind of stuff. And you do, you know, you're on Channel 4 constantly. You just did something on healthy eating and saturated fats. You've done stuff on budgeting and teaching your kids how to save. You've got radio shows. Like, you're the prominent dad there, you know, just like put up on a pedestal. Like, of all the things that you have done in terms of the radio shows and the news stuff and these lessons on Channel 4, what's your favorite lesson that you have done, and what had the biggest impact for your kids?
I started this journey a few years ago, and I wrote a book about internet dating.
Yep.
And I just wanted to write a book. It was a challenge. Mm-hmm. I'd always been writing, but then when I was married, I got writer's block. So I couldn't write for decades.
Yeah.
Right. And then after I got divorced and things settled down a little bit, I had a bit of my own journey to work out emotionally where I was and to get some sense of me back. And then I started to write this book, and it turned into a bit of a joke. But this joke got out there, got into the media. And then I found myself on Channel 5 on a program, on a dating show, the biggest dating show in England, because of it.
Okay.
And they built
the bachelor theme. Or were you one of the suitors?
I was the chooser. So I had to choose a girl. You know, they had three. It was called Blind Date. They had to, you have to choose one of three girls. Yeah. And the original host of the series was Cilla Black. And she died a few years ago. But so she would have been the host. And now Paul O'Grady's been doing it. But you know, so they called me up and they invited me and said, well, we've seen you in the news and we see, you know, we just think it'd be nice to have you as a character in there. And, you know, they built the theme of the show around my book. So I was thinking, I'll check their viewing figures first. And I saw that they had something, they had a couple of million viewers and stuff like that. So I thought, right, if I give my book title out on the show and each person that watches, here's my plan, right? Here's my thinking. This is for the greater good of society, children, heal the world. I'm going to heal the world. And community, right? I was like, so if 2 million people are watching and my book's selling for £5 and just half of the people who are watching buy my book, I could do it, but I wanted to see the numbers in whole card cash. So I'm sitting there going, 5 million. Do you remember in Twins, Danny DeVito, £5 million, £5 million. So I'm sitting there, I'm going, yes, okay, tell Paul O'Grady I will do this, you know, because for the show, I want to be there and do it for him and for the channel, for the show. And we did the show. And then at the end of it, when it was broadcast, they edited the title of the damn book.
Oh, man.
I was sitting there going, but how does that work? There was me excited for a year before the show came on, thinking, right, after tonight, I'm going to check my bank.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Bitcoin. You know, you're thinking tomorrow it's going to go up. It's going to go up. And, you know, and then you just saw, boop, there's no book title. They just took it out.
So lesson learned that you just referenced that book title 19 times.
Yeah, in the show.
In the middle of a sentence, right? You can't cut this out. Yeah.
That's right. And what's your name? Jean-Paul, Seven Deadly Dates.
Yeah.
Okay, exactly. Okay, you're going to cut that out. Seven Jean-Paul Deadly Dates. So I did that. And then, you know, I carried on doing a few bits and pieces, but the central point for me was when we did a show with, because I involved my kids in the journey from quite early. You know, I started saying to my kids, well, there's an opportunity to do something as a family. You know, I really wanted us to do something together, because as a family now, apart from taking holidays, most people now are restricted to watching television and, you know, screen activities. Right. And I know that doing television is still screen, but doing it together, doing a project, traveling to a place, learning some lines, going to a hotel together, enjoying the experience together, was bringing us together closer. And we get paid for it. I mean, sometimes for like an hour's work, my kids would get 200 quid and they were like, Dad, you know, is this my money? And I'm saying,
dad tax. Yeah. It's like, not just on food. It's on everything.
I'd be like, well, see, cause I'm like your agent, son. You know, that's the way you think. You need to understand about the harsh realities of the real world now. Because someone's going to rob you further down the line. I'd rather it be me as your first. You can hang me. But
I think that's exactly what Britney Spears' dad said.
But we did this show for BBC, which was called Teen Taxi.
Okay.
And this ended up being shown, you know, it was a pilot program, and then it went into a series. We were in series two. We were all throughout the series. We represented the sort of suburban ethnic family, if you like. And I was just so proud of them. I was really proud of them. We had to sort of spend a lot of time in the car driving around and being filmed by the channel. And it went out to different schools and different places. And even now, my son is so embarrassed because as a result of that, since two, three years ago, his friends, he's 15. And since he was 14, his friends are following me on Instagram. Imagine how sad he is. He's like, as soon as I do something stupid, his friends are going, oh, your dad, he's so funny. And he's going, no, he's not. So we're into that kind of, my friends think you're cool. And yeah. I hate that.
Okay.
We haven't gotten there yet. I would say
that was the bit that's brought us together. We've been, you know, as a family, that's brought us together as a family. So turning things around, it has worked well. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a project in the future that you're really excited about? Like something that you know is really follows your passion. I mean, obviously, you're not a very passionate person, clearly.
Yes.
But is there something that really drives you? Like,
well, you know, the last couple of years, the last year and a half, because I was working on some things, and COVID came along and stopped a lot of stuff that you could do with television. But now it's opening up again. But one of the things those projects are always going to come up. But one of the things I'm really keen on at the moment is, and it's a little bit away from the sort of, I guess, the kind of public euphoria invoking stuff. It's a project which involves working with the youth in the community. A university has asked me to work for them in the local area. And they're offering me workspace, like an opportunity to kind of run my own workshops. So I've decided that I want to run workshops on mentoring the youth on how to present. Mm. So in other words, you know, lots of people are great at watching and lots of people are great at doing stupid sketches and stuff, but a lot of people aren't very good at presenting. And if you want to do anything now, because we're so visual, because everyone wants to watch something that's presented well, whether it's media, whether it's finance, whether it's meetings, marketing, anything in business, anything anywhere, even if you've got a garden program, we've got to do a little something for the website. Here we are with Laurel's Landscaping, and you will absolutely love it. Please come and buy our products.
You sold me.
You know? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to run workshops and I'm going to show people how to present, you know, your body language, your scripting, camera angles, audio, how to do a bit of editing, you know, how to get into the media, how to do radio, how to do. And I just think that because so many people are impressed and like to learn and could do with those skills, and it crosses across in business because I'm a business coach. So I have to present stuff in business as well and lecture online and stuff. I think there's a lot of knowledge there. So that bit, it could be lucrative, I'm not going to lie, but it could also help a lot of people in the community. So I think that is really the next sort of exciting step.
Yeah,
that's for kids in general, would you say that's one of the areas that people and children or young adults, et cetera, is lacking overall? Or is there something else that you would say, okay, you know, I think kids nowadays really need to focus on these sort of things because they're just not being taught that.
I think presenting is one thing. You know what presenting does? Learning to present makes you a bit more conscious of how you come across.
Yeah.
And I think now at the moment, people are obsessed with how they look, you know, but not necessarily how they present.
Right.
So, you know, when you take a picture or when you're doing a cameo or you're playing sports, whatever it is, you know, you are taking pictures for social media. I think there's a lot of emphasis on how you look at the moment visually. On social media, people don't want to be criticized and people want to look their best all the time. What I think learning presenting does is it forces you to have a look at what skills you really have. And then you have to be able to practice them in a forum where people are giving you feedback.
Right.
Real feedback. At the moment, most people's feedback as they've grown up is the number of likes you've got on Snapchat, social media, Instagram. You know, what do likes really mean?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I think that is a problem.
It's interesting as well, the world that it is now in terms of all the different types of social media stuff, everything is repeatable. If something you don't like, you can redo it. There's a filter. There's something else that you can do, et cetera. Whereas a lot of presenting, it's live. You're in front of someone. There's no option to just say, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, can we just start this over again? Like, I just want to edit this out and, you know.
Yeah. Pretend like and, you didn't hear me.
And also in real life, because we're having to pay the price now. You put up a post on something, it affects someone's feelings. Mm-hmm. That affects your relationship with that person. And you say, oh, delete it. Or it was just, you know, I didn't mean it. You know, I send a text, I didn't mean it. You know, can I unsend it? Can I call it back? But you can't. You know, feelings have been broken. Feelings have been changed. You've got to live with that decision. Mm-hmm. So I think the great thing about instant communication is that we get our message out there quick, but without thinking about what you're doing, it's that second layer of, let me think a little bit before I just react to something. Yeah. And I think that the generation we're at the moment, it's great that they're fast with technology. It's great that they're fast and that they're more superior to the previous generation in some senses, but coming with that comes a sense of responsibility. At the moment, I'm not seeing that sense of responsibility.
Yeah. Right.
You don't have it. To be fair, you don't have it when you're young anyway. You don't, you're not supposed to. You're supposed to have the police and other people around. But, you know, I think what we're losing a little bit is that sense of, you know, manners. And I think manners is quite important.
Yeah, it's interesting as well. I remember seeing a YouTube video a while back about when Warren and I were mainly dating, online dating was not really a thing.
Each other, or
you could call it that.
We've known each other that long.
We've known each other long enough.
Yeah,
but online dating wasn't a thing, really. Plenty of fish started, but when people, the point of this YouTube video was making fun of, like, back, say 15 years ago, it was like, oh, how did you two meet? And the people were saying, oh, well, we met online. And then the other couple are like, oh, why? Like, you know, they're thinking you're nuts to have met someone online.
Yeah.
And then fast forward to now, it's people that are now, oh, how did you meet? Oh, we met in person. The other couple are like, you guys are psycho.
How'd you do that? Like,
that's weird. Exactly. It's just interesting how that's changed. And one thing that I've thought about is that I think it's transitioning to more, if there's something just slightly wrong with someone, okay, it's so easy to find someone else as a potential match at this point in time. There's no invested energy, et cetera, anymore. You know, like, if you have to go and approach someone to ask them out, et cetera, there's effort there to be able to court someone, et cetera. And if there's something that's slightly off, they chew with their mouth open or I don't know what, some stupid little thing. I think because you put so much energy to begin with, you work that through and potentially get
a
positive.
To accept it.
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas nowadays it's like, well, this person's no good. They're 1 inch shorter than what I want. Like, out, you know, we'll move on to something else type
thing. They don't make enough money or.
Yeah. Do you notice that at all with your, I mean, of course your oldest is only 20, but have you experienced that with all the different things that you've been out there in the world?
Yeah, I think so. There is an element of that. I mean, in previous times you had a bus every 15 minutes. And at the moment I'd compare the traffic to, you know, you've got a bus every 10 seconds.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So look, if that bus, you know, is not to my liking, I've got so many buses I can choose, and there's only going to be a few seconds between the next one. So why do I care?
Right.
Swipe.
I do not care where I'm going. I don't care what bus I get on, because there's plenty of them.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Whereas I think you make more of an effort. If you know one's every, you know, there's a bus every hour, you'll make sure, you know, you know that you've got everything. I've got my money. You just prepare yourself more for something where there's less volume. You prepare yourself more for outcomes where something could go wrong. And then when you're on the bus, if it's a shit ride and the guys play music you don't like, you're going to stay on the bus because you don't have as much choice.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? And I think what the internet has done and what these companies are very good at doing is creating a reality that is, I've got to say it's a reality because, you know, it is a form of reality, but it's a reality where people believe that they have unlimited choice because they see the number of faces and profiles and things, and they get a little, if they swipe, they get a reaction and there's a potential that they could. So in their brain, it's constantly creating the reality that there's lots of choice. Mm-hmm. But then if you look statistically and see, well, what are the real outcomes, statistically, I'm telling you that the actual outcome where somebody is meeting someone and going out with them in a normal, healthy, functional relationship compared to the volume of transactions out there is small. It is very, very small.
Well, that does make sense when it's a business that, you know, profits more off of keeping you perpetually single, right? Like it's
100%.
They don't really want you to have a great match because then you stop the service. Like you're better off just having failed relationship after failed relationship because then you keep coming
100%.
Back.
100%. It's the same. I've got a friend who's she just worked on Married at First Sight UK, and now she's working with the Australian version. You know, and she's been a matchmaker for years, mm-hmm. and she runs all these events and retreats and all the rest of it. And it's constantly people who are desperate, you know, to meet the one, you know. Mm-hmm. And the thing about the one is it only exists in the Matrix, right? That's the only place that the one exists.
Well, and the Bible, you know.
Right, and the Bible as well, you know. So
that is a great line, by the way. That is, yeah. Did you just come up with that? Is that yeah? Well done.
It's the only place, you know, that it exists. It doesn't exist. In other words, I've read this book on dating that was written by a mathematician, and it said that the odds on, you know, with so many billion people on the planet, 8 billion, there's potentially 1 million people that could match with you very well to settle down with. Mm-hmm. So 1 million people sounds like a lot, but if a lot of them are in Australia or in the Amazon rainforest, I'm not likely to meet them tomorrow. So they are out there, okay? They are out there. The key to this is actually to keep going out and trying to meet people. But lots of people do believe in the dating stories. And it's one of those things that is taken off like a trend, like every other part of our history. We will do it to death until people sort of find some other way.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And yes. If you look at it, we're the only species on this planet that are confused about the mating game. Every other species on this planet knows how to bloody mate, right? And some of them eat each other or kill each other after they've mated, knowing full well they're going to die before mating, but they still do it.
I'm going to enjoy this.
If it's the last thing I do, I'm going to enjoy this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah, it's an interesting insight for sure.
You know, we're the only ones that don't know what we're doing. And yet, if you look at it, evolution speaks volumes. We as men, despite what everyone tells you out there, we're all equal and everyone's equal and everyone's like, no, we're not the fucking same. Men and women are completely different. Equal or not equal doesn't come into it. We are completely different beings. So the fact that we don't know anything about women and women don't seem to know anything about men is what caused all the bloody confusion. Yeah. And then not knowing what you want. You should just be able to walk up to a woman and say, look, you know, I'd like to mate.
I don't think that goes over that well anymore.
No, it doesn't. No. But you should, because essentially, if you're in your younger years, you've got kids and Graham's got kids, in your younger years, a woman that you met would have an expectation of meeting you because she knows eventually you're going to settle down, get together, have kids and have a home.
Right.
And statistically, most people now who are getting together, getting married, having kids, having families, statistically, most people are splitting up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Most of them are divorcing.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're living together, most are breaking up. There's more breakups. So in which case, we obviously are doing the bit that we're supposed to do as far as nature goes, but the choices we're making are shit. We don't know how to choose.
Right. So what advice did you give your son or sons, and particularly your older one who is now moving out with his girlfriend? Like what advice did you give them in terms of finding a match?
Well, I can't tell him what I tell you. You know, I have to go into dad mode. You know, I just have to be like, you know, it's like you don't have to say everything you know. You know, I just what it is with him is, and the truth is, as a parent, because you can be parent, adult, or child, and I, as my parent head on, all I want is for him to be happy, and he seems to be happy.
Okay,
you know, so if in his happiness he finds later on he's happy or unhappy, mm-hmm. I think that, you know, that critical path analysis has to be done by him further down the line. Me, That's not for me to worry about. You know, yeah. I just say he seems happy. He doesn't do drugs. He's not a big drinker and he's a great human being. They seem very happy. They're celebrating this weekend. It will make you sick. Their third year anniversary. Whew. They're going to London. They're going to spend a week in a fancy hotel. They've got all these site visits planned, different museums, restaurants, London Eye and all sorts. And he's happy. He's really looking forward to it. And so is she. And when you see them together, they really are. They don't stop talking all day to each other. They really mm-hmm. like each other. Mm-hmm. So from that perspective, I just say to him, look, I said to him, are you happy? And he says to me, yeah. I said to him, well, then, you know, I said, you're doing well and I've done well.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And if you didn't like her, I'm assuming you do. If you didn't like her, what would you do? Would you do anything? Would you offer them critical advice or would you just say it's not my role?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't even say it's not my role. I just think that if I don't like somebody, first of all, there's hardly anyone I don't like. I'll be honest with you, but I just don't have that emotion in me. I'm not, you know, if someone is someone that's not my cup of tea, I wouldn't dislike them. I just wouldn't like them maybe, you know, I'd just be indifferent.
Yeah.
But I think if I didn't like, if I felt strongly enough, I thought, you know, I actually don't like this person. I think he would know because he knows me. I wear my heart. I'm quite open about how I feel and what I say. So I think he'd know, but I wouldn't go and try and cut the girl's legs out or say, you know, I don't like this girl, whatever it is. I don't think that would be my place. I mean, I think that's up to them. Listen, when I was going out with girls, there was lots of people my dad didn't like. I'm sure my mum, even my ex-wife, now they're all pally. But at the time when I was going out with, they were very much, oh, we don't like her. You know, she's trying to steal our son away. Oh, my God. You know, and she's just come here off this country. She's just got off the boat 5 minutes ago. And here she is making a beeline for our son. And years later, they're all tight. You know, they get on well. So sometimes you might not like someone or like something about them, but you might find that person grows you because you understand things a bit differently later on, maybe. Yeah.
So as an extension of that, were there any people that you dated since your divorce that your kids didn't like? And what did you do in that situation?
I didn't actually introduce many of my dates to my kids. I got through a lot of girls when I finished. I mean, I would have had to have one of those revolving doors, man, if I was going to do that to my kids. But here's the next one. Here's A, B, C. It just, you know, it would have been very confusing. Mom? You know, so there was one girl I dated and I was besotted because this girl had one of those bodies that I've been craving for years. She had the most phenomenal body. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a work of art. I mean, it should have been in a museum somewhere, you know, just there so people would look. It was a beautiful, beautiful body. And it was so, I think it really turned my eye and I lost my sense. I lost my balance because I was just so attracted to her.
Right.
And I end up falling for her. And within a few months, she came home, she met my kids, and they saw how much I liked her, and they saw how much I was into her. And they told me later on, I said, why didn't you tell me how you felt? And they said, oh, we saw you were really happy. We were just glad that you were happy. You know, we just liked seeing you happy because we hadn't seen you with someone like that. You know, even with mum, I'd never really seen you like that, but you seemed very happy. But I felt quite sad about it because I realized that she was the wrong person when I told her my son was coming to live with me. And she said, he's coming to live with you. And I said, yeah, because we weren't living together, me and the girl. And she said, what about us? And I was like, what do you mean, what about us? And she said, well, how are we going to have our time if your son is there all the time?
Yeah.
So that's when I was a bit hurt. And that's when I realized that, you know, she didn't have room, you know, in her sights.
The model of what she wanted for life didn't fit kids.
Yeah, she didn't. Yeah, okay. She didn't, and she had her own son, but he'd gone off to live with his dad. But she just didn't want to be with my kids. And she didn't, you know, she just didn't really appreciate that family life. And then I realized she hadn't grown up with her own family. And she had a very peculiar view of family and stuff like that. So peculiar to me.
Yeah.
So I think with my kids, that was the only person that I'd introduced. It went wrong. Because at the end of it, when we split up, you know, I was quite upset by it. And the kids said to me, you know, are you okay? And I said, yeah, I'm fine. And I said to my son, my young one, I said, what did you think of her then? You know, being kind. And he said to me, Dad, she was the wrong piece of the puzzle.
Right. Yeah. So your kids are smart enough to recognize that.
They're smarter than me, man. That's why if I don't like their girlfriend, I'm going to be thinking I'm the one who doesn't know anything. That's right. You probably know something I don't know, you know, because the thing is, I've seen this and understood it over the years when I did a little bit of self-analysis, which is that I had a lot of love from my parents when I was young, a lot of love, and still today, but I didn't have enough attention. Okay, I didn't. I was hungry for attention. I had no siblings and my parents worked a lot and we had no community and no family. So I was hungry for attention. And that has stayed with me till today. I recognize it as being a strength and also a weakness in that I need to have a... So girls that will be with me and will be very much like attentive will be very popular with me. I mean, I like that. And I'd love to give attention as well.
Yeah, equally. I was going to say, you know, clearly you also love to give attention. Like that's...
Yeah, I do. But anything less intense than that, if it's someone we're not really paying attention to them, you know, it's kind of off the radar a bit for me still, because I like the engagement. I like a little bit of the intensity to be there. So I do need that.
Because you've taken some of that giving attention and you've done... You know, you've done some incredible interviews with it where you're, you know, helping to promote other people, that sort of thing. Like you did an interview with Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
And that was incredible. Like just how do you get Mike Tyson to do an interview? That's not an easy thing.
Well, no, but the thing is, don't forget, we're on social media. We have a lot of contact with people. And I'd met Mike anyway a few years ago.
Yeah.
So we already had a meeting, and the meeting was actually instigated by him anyway, not even by me. We met at a hotel, and I'd wanted to meet him. Obviously, there was a big crowd around him. It was an event, and it was like the Moses parting the sea. I literally just looked over at him and I said to him, with all these people, I didn't shout. I just said, Mike, I'd like to grab a picture with you later on. And everyone stopped talking and, you know, the sea opened up and Mike said, absolutely. I can give you a picture later on. You know, you come back a little later. I take a picture with you. It'd be phenomenal. Absolutely. So I said to him, thank you, Mike. That's real nice of you. I said, that's real nice. And I came back later on. Mm-hmm. And there was, a whale of people around him and there was no way of getting to him. And I thought, I really want my picture with Mike.
Yeah.
And I spoke to the bouncers and no one was giving me the time of the day. And then I think Mike heard me talking to the bouncer and he remembered, you know, that he'd said that to me. And he said, I remember that guy. He said, let him through. And he pushed, you know, everyone away. And then we came up, I was on the stage with him and we kicked it for a little while and I talked to him about when he was IYU. He was in Indiana Youth, IYC, Indiana Youth Center. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'd written to him back then. And some of the guys, I think Tupac had gone to see him and Chris Eubanks from over here and stuff. And I said, I'd written to him. And I just explained to him that at that time in my life, I was going through a bit of a turmoil. And I'd identified a lot with him.
Sure.
With him going through some much bigger things, but that's why I'd written to him. And his eyes kind of lit up. And then, his eyes kind of lit up. We had a bit. So we had a bit of a chat. So we, you know, we exchanged some messages at the time. And, you know, that just went on for a short while. And then he changed his phone number. So, you know, they change their phone numbers all the time. So just a little hit on social media. And then, you know, I got a chance to talk to him. So, it's just, I was talking to Floyd Mayweather a few months back. We were arguing on Instagram about something. Yeah. So these things happen now with social media. You know, you do have opportunities, you know, to talk to people. It can happen. It's hit and miss. But like you guys, you've done an interview with somebody who's been talking to some of these Hollywood guys, you know, Matthew McConaughey, you mentioned last time, so forth.
And that's Larry Hagner.
You know, that's going to happen. You're going to have amazing experiences, you know, talking to people. Live life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're having a great time chatting with people. It's been a lot of fun.
There are certain questions, you know, once I joke about this, inevitably, it'd be great to talk to Tom Brady. And one question that I want to ask Tom Brady, and Warren's already chuckling because he knows it's coming, is I really want to ask if he farts in front of his wife.
hard-hitting journalism here.
It's hard-hitting. Yeah. I think the answer is very insightful overall. I mean, granted, it's hilarious to get the answer, but the underlying aspect of it explains how much of a relationship or the type of relationship you have with your spouse, right?
Yeah, it's called spousal abuse.
Yeah, right. No, that's only when you hold the covers over her head. That's when. That's
oh, is it, Warren?
Yeah,
okay.
That's what the lawyers told me.
Yeah, I'm sure, man.
Do you have anybody that you would really like to interview in the future? Like, who's on your list of people that you'd like to chat with?
You know, I'll be honest with you. There's Mike was probably for me because I identified when I was younger.
Yeah.
That was a big one for me. I mean, it was one of those ones where, you know, if you had a dream, like some people would have wanted to meet Muhammad Ali and maybe interview him or Nelson Mandela. For me, it was always Mike just because of things I identified with. But I'd say Will Smith.
Yeah.
Probably the next one. And Will Smith was on my radar for a little while. But then when he got into this entanglement story a little while ago, with Jada, I saw a different side to Will, and I thought, well, there's something going on there with Will, which, you know, sadly is coming into his life in a way which is not allowing him to be, I think, the guy that he might want to be at this point in his life, because his kids are growing up. But he's one guy that I'd like to talk to.
He's a really inspirational figure.
He is. He's inspirational. He's entertaining. He's been through his family. What's amazing about him is when you look at him through Fresh Prince, which you're still watching, to what he's doing now with his family. Mm-hmm. Because aside from this story between him and Jada, you don't ever see him or Jada in the news.
Yeah.
You know, I like people like that. Denzel Washington, you know, some amazing actors, Tom Cruise, amazing actors. You don't hear much about their private life outside.
Yeah,
you know, they've got an element of decorum and dignity,
which
is difficult, I think, to follow through at that kind of level of their career and with the attention of the world on you.
Yeah.
But other than that, to be honest, apart from those huge profiles, it's always going to be smaller local folk.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there's more merit for me to talk to people who are maybe figureheads in a community. Then, because they're inspiring communities as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
By me interviewing somebody who's huge, there's nowhere for us to go with that, really, because, you know, what can you talk to Will Smith about? I mean, you could question him in interview, but he's interviewed 1,000 times a week.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to do any good for the public. But if you interview someone who's in a position to be able to empower people, they're at their beginning stage. That's where you want to get into people at this stage.
Boots on the ground.
It's going somewhere. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I would like to ask Will Smith or, you know, celebrities, A-list type stuff, just about their parenting experiences a little bit as well, you know, because it's a totally different landscape being in a public eye where, you know, Mike Tyson has children. There's so many situations where privacy is something that we all take for granted, as it were, you know, when we're not really at that level of us, certainly a lot more than you even. Right. And just understanding that and what that is like, from a parent perspective, with children, because you always want to try and protect things, et cetera. And just having to say, be concerned all the time of where you're going and the ideas, et cetera. Like there's a relaxation that we don't really know about, of just being able to go wherever we want. Are we going to go to the grocery store or whatever it is? Like, it'd be very interesting just to understand the mindset behind that and uncover that a little bit.
Do you find with your persona on, you know, BBC, Channel 4, all that kind of stuff, do you get stopped when you're out? Like, do people...
Sometimes, you know what happens? I get stopped or spoken to quite a lot from people who say, I know you from somewhere.
Right. Yeah.
They never know where.
Right.
They never know where. And, you know, I have fun with it. I just say, I empty your bins on Fridays. And I sometimes wave to you and say, look, you've got any rubbish you want me to collect. Yeah. And now you don't know who I am. I mean, it hurts.
You've got some interesting stuff in that trash.
But it happens quite a lot. I mean, even when I'm with my family or friends, you know, people do sort of say, oh, I know you from somewhere. So I think I've had enough out there so people know the face.
Right.
You know, and I think that's what's happening. But at the moment, because I'm not fixed to anything permanently, people can't say, I know you from that show. Do you know what I mean? What they'll do is say, I know you. And it happens quite a lot. The only time it happened for sure where someone said, I saw you on the program was, well, it happened a couple of times. I was on a program, a Channel 4 series recently, and then and another one. So they were blocks. I was on TV for a few weeks. Right. So then when I went to a club, a girl said, hey, I know you from, and I said, yeah. I said, you sure do? I said, you look great, man. I said, now put down your number before I don't want it no more, you know.
Do you like the notoriety? Do you like being noticed, or are you more of a private individual and would rather sort of just maintain the privacy aspect all the time?
I think I'm in a great position of having a lot of privacy. And, you know, when I'm in public, I see the two things. When you're at home and you're in that home life, you've got a lot going on at home, which is just the dreary part of life, which you just mong out, spend time with your kids at home, which is beautiful. But then when you're out in the public and people do talk to you or recognize you, or you have that notoriety going on, it's lovely. I think I've got both. You know, I think I've got both. So I like both. I like being on the radio. I like being in the public eye on when I can choose to be. And I like the home life where it's private and you can shut down. You know, you're just with your kids or with, you know, a lady or with your family. So I like both sides. If I'm at home, I don't ever feel, oh, I wish I wasn't here. I wish something was going on outside in the public. And equally, you know, I enjoy both sides of life. I think there's a good balance, you know?
Yeah. For sure. So one of the last questions that we usually ask guests, you know,
that's good because I have to go in 3 minutes.
Yeah. what is
on the radio at 8, but yes, go on.
What's one of the things that you do with or for your kids that you absolutely hate to do, but you know you have to do it?
Oh, that's a good question. With or for your kids that you hate to do, but you know you have to do it.
Yeah, and you do it anyways.
I tell you what I hate. Okay, this is a good question. It's nagging.
Yeah,
it's nagging. I'll be honest with you, especially with my younger one. It's nagging. It's saying to your kids, you know, it's the weekend and you're in bed at 11 o'clock. You know, get up.
Yeah,
get a life, man. You know, find the motivation. You haven't exercised for a week because you're a slob. Get down there, take a run, take a walk, go and play basketball. It's nagging. It's your room is a shit state. You've got cutlery up here, which has been here since 1952. You know, if I open your wardrobe, there's dead people in there. You know, I mean, it's nagging. It's that nag where you just constantly got to keep pushing. And then it's the look that you get back saying, yeah, okay. You know, right. I don't like that because it's not fun. Yeah. And it builds not animosity or resentment, but it stops you from flourishing a relationship between the two of you because you've got to be the dad. You've got to be more than the dad. You've got to be the parent. Now you're not just the dad, you're the parent.
Yeah.
You're the administrator, you know? And I don't like being that guy. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I don't. And sometimes I've got to be hard. I've got to be hard about it because it's not happened after two or three times. You know what I do? Warren, Graham, you know, here's a tip for you. When you know, when you got girls, it's different. I go in the room when they're not there. They're out for a few hours and everything that's not in the floor, anything on the floor, and I put it all in a black bag and I throw it in the bin.
We just did an episode on this.
Yeah. We just did an episode about how to, you know, get them to clean their rooms. Oh, listen, stuff, so.
The thing is, my son will then go through the black bag outside. Because I said, I don't want that black bag in the house. It's been in the bin. So he'll go through the stuff, decide what he wants. And then what he'll do, he'll come back and put it on the floor. because he knows
lesson learned.
Dad,
yeah,
he knows dad has shot his load, man, so he's not gonna go down this route for another 2 weeks.
You know what this means? We have 2 weeks of rest. This is nice.
That's right. Yeah, he said I've dealt with him now. He said he's okay. I'm all right now. I'm good. We're good.
So other than the black bag in the center, is it, has it been effective? Do they, are they progressing towards having a cleaner thing, or is it just nice to clean things up and throw things out?
It's not progressing at all, man. It don't progress at all. And the reason it don't progress is because I think with teenagers, their brain is just not developed enough for that side of life. So you know what I do is when he goes to his mum's, I just clean the room out myself. I put everything, like I said, in a space. I'll go through, I'll clean the room, tidy up, make sure it's like Airbnb down in my house, right? I'm literally your cleaner. I'm your cook. I'm your chef. You know, I'm your financer.
That's exactly why the dad tax exists.
Yeah, 100%.
You deserve 100%. Every dollar that you're taking off of his earnings, for sure.
100%. But I tell you something, when it comes to pocket money time of the month, I get it all back, guys. Okay. Because I just say, well, you know, your pocket money is due tomorrow. What are you going to spend it on? And it's like, oh, I'm going to buy this and that. And I said, yeah. I said, well, look, I need you to wash the dishes and the hoovering has to be done. Right. And the garden needs cutting and the driveway needs sweeping and your room needs to be clean. And you need to brush your teeth and you need to do your homework. And he's like, hang on, let me write this down. Hold on. I need to make it, get it all down.
Yeah. The peaks and valleys of efficiency and clearly, exactly.
100%. Yeah. 100%, man. And then when it's all done, then I say, let me pay you in cash. There you go. You can see the money. You can feel it. It's just learning, you know, how to, you gotta learn how to roll with it. And I won't get stressed over it.
Yeah.
I'm one of those guys that will shout for 2 minutes and then I'm like, that's it. It's done. It's finished.
Yeah, well, it seems like us as parents, our job is essentially just to prepare them for life. And as much as we can do that, then, you know, we've done our job.
That's the idea. JP, yeah, thank you so much for coming on our podcast. Sorry, Lord JP, as
you
be called. Yes. We really appreciate you taking the time. This was awesome conversation.
Pleasure.
We will make sure that we put in the show notes everywhere people can find you. Instagram, tag a couple of the different shows you've been on, all that sort of stuff. So anybody listening, please do go check out JP. Fantastic information, resources, and entertainer. I mean, God, this has been
and
fun.
Author.
It's been a lot of, this has been really funny.
You didn't mention your book 19 times though. So we can just cut
we're
that
just
one
cutting
time
it
out.
So,
yeah.
So
yeah,
thank you.
I knew you guys just cut it out. I didn't bother. You know, I could have had 2 million views, man. Each one's I'm counting right now. How much am I going to make? No, this is for a different purpose, 7 Deadly Dates. It's for a different... This is more than
nice.
Love it. Love it.
Well, thank you so much, guys. That's really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much, Warren and Graham. Lovely to meet you guys. Take care. Listen, have a great day, because I know it's daytime for you. And don't worry, in another hour, you can start drinking.
I look forward to it. Okay.
Take care.